Chapter 12. The Myth of the Mound Builders. On October 12, 1492, Italian explorer Christopher Columbus, Spain's Admiral of the Ocean Sea, set foot on an island in the Bahamas. There he found people whom he thought would make ideal servants. Within a few generations, however, unfamiliar diseases and mistreatment had drastically reduced the island populations of the Caribbean. Few paused to wonder where these native people had come from or how they had reached their homeland. The debate over Native Americans began when Columbus paraded some of his captives before the Spanish king. Who were these strange people? Were they human beings? It was assumed that they were simple, uncomplicated souls until Spanish conqueror Hernan Cortes and the soldiers under his command revealed the dazzling, sophisticated world of the Aztecs in 1519. The Aztec capital, Tenochtitlan, the place of the prickly pear cactus, which stood where Mexico City is now, was home to more than 200,000 people, with a great market that rivaled those of Constantinople and Seville. The staggering diversity of Native American societies, from simple hunting bands to wealthy civilizations, posed challenging questions in a Europe raised on the biblical creation story set in the Middle East. How had the Indians reached the Americas? Had they come by land or from Asia? Or had some unknown pioneer crossed the Atlantic long before Columbus? American archaeologists are still researching these issues. In 1589, a Spanish Catholic missionary, José de Acosta, announced that the first settlers had crossed into North America from Asia, with only short stretches of navigation. We now know that Acosta was correct and that the Native Americans were indeed of Asian origin. Nearly three centuries later, in 1856, this theory received a boost when a scholar named Samuel Haven affirmed that the Indians had crossed the Bering Strait in ancient times. Haven was a lone voice at a time when thousands of settlers were moving westward across the Allegheny Mountains into unknown territory. Most of them were farmers eager for fertile land. They were astounded to find hundreds of large mounds, earthen enclosures, and banks in the Ohio Valley and from the Great Lakes and Nebraska to Florida. Lusting after gold and buried wealth, many farmers went treasure hunting. They found numerous human skeletons, shell ornaments, and weapons, but no gold. The mysterious earthworks, artificial banks of soil, emerged from often thick woodland as pioneer farmers cleared their lands. Some of the mounds stood alone, others were in tightly arranged groups. Great enclosures surrounded some of them. The earthworks were clearly ancient, for no modern Indian peoples constructed anything of the kind. Some were obviously burial mounds, with well-defined layers of skeletons or elaborate log-lined burial chambers. When the farmers trenched or dug into the mounds, they recovered stone pipes, finely hammered copper axes and ornaments, well-made pottery and other tools that were clearly the work of skilled craftspeople. The few experts who looked at the finds saw no similarities with Egyptian or other artworks. The mound builders became something unknown and mysterious. So, who were the mound builders? Almost everyone assumed that the Indians were too primitive, and so tales of gold, valiant warriors, and exotic civilizations spread like wildfire. These were the stuff of dreams for adventurous settlers in an unfamiliar land. Tall tales entertained farmers on winter evenings. In the early 1830s, popular writer Josiah Priest wove stories of great armies of white warriors, of war elephants charging over the plains, and of larger-than-life heroes. He gave the North Americans an entirely fictional, heroic past, usually known today as the Myth of the Mound Builders. Treasure hunting was commonplace, but there were relatively few spectacular finds. Digging was quick and destructive. Mounds were flattened by plows, and few of the settlers examined the earthworks and mounds at all systematically. But there were one or two exceptions. Caleb Atwater, postmaster of Circleville, Ohio, surveyed and excavated large numbers of mounds in the early 19th century. He found hundreds of burials and numerous fine ornaments made from mica, a transparent mineral, some in the form of bird claws or humans. The deeply religious Atwater insisted that those who had built the mounds were shepherds and farmers from Asia who had crossed the Bering Strait soon after the biblical flood. As for the Indians, he assumed that they had arrived long after the earthworks were abandoned. In developing his theory of ancient migration, Samuel Haven had relied on the work of another researcher, Ephraim Squire, 1821-88. Squire was an intelligent, well-educated American with a serious interest in the past. He began his career as a journalist in New York State, then worked for a small-town local paper in Chillicothe, Ohio. Later on, he would become a traveler and successful diplomat, and on assignment to Peru in 1868, he would become one of the first outsiders to describe the breathtaking Inca sites in the Andes. But long before he went to South America, Squire teamed up with a local Chillicothe physician, Edwin Davis. Between 1845 and 1847, the two excavated, surveyed, and puzzled over the bewildering array of earthworks and burial mounds in the Ohio Valley. The major force in the partnership, Squire was responsible for the partners' accurate plans of many major earthworks. His surveys were so precise that they are still used today and appear in several guidebooks. Supported by the American Ethnological Society, the two men hurriedly tunneled into more than 200 mounds, surveyed many earthworks and enclosures, and assembled a huge collection of artifacts. One important site they surveyed was the Great Serpent Mound, a long, curving mound on a ridge in the shape of a wriggling snake holding a small oval mound in its open jaws. All this research came together in Squire and Davis's 1848 book, Ancient Monuments of the Mississippi Valley. Squire wanted to produce facts to replace wild theories, and the 300-page volume was a handsome publication with lavish illustrations. It remained the only account of the mound builders for generations. The authors attempted to classify the earthworks and mounds into such imaginative categories as mounds of sacrifice and temple mounds. But their inventories of sites and their detailed plans are a delight to examine and can be linked to modern maps. In many cases, the authors recorded features that have since vanished. Squire carefully described the small finds from his hasty excavations. He even correctly identified the copper ore from near Lake Superior far to the north that had been hammered into simple axes and adzes. There were carved soapstone pipes and animal figures. The latter struck Squire as far more sophisticated than anything fashioned by the local Indians. Squire and Davis wrote of the mound builders in general terms, pointing out that the mound people were expert at constructing defensive earthworks. Their ideas were influenced by popular tales of great armies and huge battles in earlier times. They painted a portrait of peace-loving early mound builders. When attacked by hostile savage hordes, they had frantically built defenses to protect themselves. But it had all been in vain. The invaders conquered them, and the mound builders disappeared. Squire and Davis assumed that the Indians encountered by Europeans were these warlike, hostile newcomers, who were thus no more entitled to Ohio than the Europeans. Squire and Davis may have been prejudiced, but their catalogs and surveys placed the controversies surrounding the mound builders on an entirely new footing. Nevertheless, wild speculation continued. William Pigeon, who claimed to be a trader in the West with long experience of Indians, announced in 1858 that the biblical Adam had built the first mound in America. Many others had followed, including Alexander the Great and various Egyptians and Phoenicians. Pigeon made a fortune from his book, which he said was based on conversations with an Indian named Ducuda. His informant conveniently died after passing on his secrets. For all the myth-making, change was afoot. Archaeological research received a major boost from the publication of Darwin's On the Origin of Species and from the Neanderthal discovery. See Chapter 8. A new generation of research began, centered on institutions like Harvard University and the Smithsonian Institution. But despite numerous claims, no one found any Sum Hand axes or Neanderthal fossils anywhere in North America. The major controversies still surrounded the mound builders of the Midwest and South. So intense was the speculation about the mound builders that in 1881 a group of archaeologists persuaded the U.S. Congress to set aside funds for mound builder research. A division of mound exploration attached to the Smithsonian's Bureau of Ethnology set to work under Professor Cyrus Thomas, 1825 to 1910. Little is known about Thomas, who was a geologist by training. However, we do know that he originally believed that a race of mound builders, separate from the Indians, had built the mounds. Thomas and eight assistants fanned out over mound country, especially the Mississippi Valley. Here, farmers were digging into the mounds in search of treasure, and there was now an active market in artifacts. A paper merchant named Clarence Moore spent his summers floating along the Mississippi and Ohio rivers on houseboats. He would stop, his laborers would dig, and thousands of artifacts would vanish below deck, to be sold or added to his collection. Most of Thomas's work concentrated on the country between Ohio and Wisconsin. He spread his team thinly on the ground, and they worked all year round surveying and excavating with a minimum of destruction. He labored for more than 7 years. This was planned archaeological research, collecting accurate data on a large scale. He and his men sampled more than 2,000 mounds and earthworks of every size and complexity. Some 38,000 artifacts came into Thomas's hands via excavation or donation. In 1894, Thomas published a 700-page report in which he described hundreds of earthworks and mounds in minute detail. Although Thomas's work is not an easy read, it is based on carefully collected data. As he described the earthworks and finds, his beliefs about the mound builders changed radically. As a careful researcher, he compared the artifacts and artworks from his excavations and from private collections to the objects made by living Native American societies. He found close similarities between ancient and modern tools and weapons. He also studied accounts by European travelers who described mounds that were still in use as late as the 18th century. No longer did Thomas believe in a vanished mound builder civilization in the Mississippi Valley. Instead, he stated that all the sites he had examined were constructed by the Indian tribes inhabiting the corresponding area when it was first visited by Europeans. Thomas's data-driven book changed the archaeological game, and science came to replace speculation. But prejudice against Native Americans endured, and their lands were seized, often on flimsy legal grounds. Gradually, haphazard digging by non-experts gave way to the systematic fieldwork of professional researchers. Many years were to pass before well-trained archaeologists came along, but the corner had been turned. Tragically, apart from some rare sites in public parks, nearly all the places in Thomas's monograph, a detailed study, have suffered at least some damage. Thomas's report remains a basic source for archaeologists today. But the legacy of this energetic field worker extends even further. He commented on the great diversity of peoples who had lived in mound builder country in ancient times. The challenge for future archaeologists was to identify these diverse societies and their relationships with both earlier and later cultures. Over a century since Cyrus Thomas finally debunked the myth of the mound builders, research has revealed some of this remarkable diversity. Today, we know a lot about the so-called Adena, Hopewell, and Mississippian societies who built the earthworks, and about their elaborate ritual beliefs. We also know that many of the rituals and religious beliefs of those who built North America's great earthworks survived into the period of recorded history. Thomas's work failed to halt the tidal wave of destruction, but he at least managed to persuade a group of Boston ladies to raise $6,000 to buy the Great Serpent Mound, which he restored as a public park for visitors in 1887. It is now an Ohio State Memorial and a National Historic Landmark.